If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
Blog Talk Radio.
A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years' combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hi there! We both looked at each other like, who's going to talk first?
Well, both of us at the same time, the same people.
Yes. Welcome, everyone. It is Friday, September 9th.
And it is our fourth show. So,
yay.
Whoa. So, how was your week?
Okay. It's been experiencing some of the fun of Mercury retrograde in a gentle way, but still, it's there, you know. Not too bad. How about you? How's your week been?
Oh, well, I got a chance to actually practice the hermetic saying that is very much part of the Golden Dawn, is to know, to will, to dare, and to be silent, mm-hmm. based on some things that have happened this week. So kind of saying it all in that little sentence.
Mm-hmm. How very cryptic.
Definitely.
Alan says this is episode 5.
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Tells you that we're still back at least one shot.
Yeah.
Well, time flies when you're having fun.
That's right.
Yes. And on that note, since we've obviously hit the one part that we love to talk about, which is tools.
Yes.
Today is wands.
That's right.
Yes.
Wands. The magic mystery of a wand, which has become a pretty interesting mainstream concept. Seems like everyone now has a wand or some representation of a wand or earrings or a little necklace from the popularity of Harry Potter, right?
Oh, definitely.
So there's some good things about that because it does make magic and witchcraft a little bit more accessible for folks, but there's also a long history of ancient practice around using a magical wand. Lots of different cultures that use the wand historically, and this is all clearly recorded.
Do you want to jump into that? I think we might want to talk a little bit maybe about how wands have become much more popular based on some of the culture that's coming out in films and books and things like that. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. Okay. You know, I think part of the Harry Potter vibe has really made them super popular. And, you know, there's this magic and mystery included in it. You know, you go to the wand shop and Ollivander sizes you up and decides what kind of wood and what kind of flexibility and what the core of the wand should be. And it's even gotten to a point where recently there was an article going around on Facebook about a professional wand maker who makes wands for witches who are practicing witchcraft and paganism, and he wouldn't sell them to Harry Potter fans. He was saying that only, quote-unquote, real witches could buy his wands. There is, you know, a little bit of backlash as well from some of the pagan community on this mainstream concept of wands and magical tools.
Mm. Yes, I know. It can be kind of, what is it, reverse discrimination. Oops.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but I know that it does tend to make it more accessible and people understand it in a magical, graphic way, but that's part one of learning something, just like we find when we first began our trip down this road, the different things that we looked for. What was your first wand?
Yeah, so when I was probably 16 or 17, started dabbling and practicing when I was about 15 years old, and about 16 or 17, I found a stick. I found a stick at a local park, and it had an interesting bend to it and an interesting shape, and there was just something about it that I really fell in love with, and I have no idea what kind of wood it is. I still have it. I have no idea, but I just really fell in love with it, and I decided I needed to keep it. I wanted to have it, and so that was my first wand.
Hmm. When I was asked, when we were talking before the show, I couldn't remember my first wand. Is that bad?
Nah.
You know, does this show I'm getting old?
Nah.
Okay. But I'm sure it was probably a stick. And probably when I was, you know, in my 13s, I was up here at the property my parents had, and I probably found one and I would play with it that way. But I don't think in getting into magic and the spiritual practice, I didn't really start owning things like that officially with intent until I was in my late 20s, early 30s.
Mm.
Yeah. And then I went into, obviously, the different kinds. And over the years, as you can see, we kind of did a photograph of the different things that I've acquired or I use.
Right.
And my ex-husband was a wand maker.
Nice.
Yes, he made wands. He did them with the glass shaft and the pewter spiraling around,
mm-hmm.
with the different kinds of little stones added with the tips and everything. And we actually had it as a logo for Firewind, which was our store.
Nice.
And I still have it, unfortunately, as I was discussing with Phoenix. It's packed, and I couldn't find it to get it out for tonight. But
yeah.
So that's one of my favorite ones, though, and it is kind of, you know, magical unto itself.
Nice. That's really great. I also have a wand now that I actually bought at the Renaissance Fair, and it is made from a banister. So this wand maker goes and reclaims wood, and they're already shaped into the shape of a wand. Basically, if you think of an old banister, a wooden banister, the slats of the banister that connect, you know, the floor to the railing, right, they have this very interesting wand-like shape to them, and he just smooths the edges and sands them down, and he even sells, you know, the frog, like the little carrying holster like you would put a sword into. So you
Neat.
Can buy the wand from him with the little holster, and I have that. That's my go-to wand now, and I just love it so much. I don't know what kind of wood it is. It's dark, but being able to carry it on my belt, and I just feel so very witchy. And the wand I found as a teenager is handcrafted by me because I found it and I sanded it and I took time with it. And this other wand is handcrafted by an artisan. And I love them both for different ways, for different reasons. And I don't know that one is a favorite over another, but they're very different. They're very different.
It's true. You have different wands with different feels. I know that again, Harry Potter's tradition, or the way that the wand that you have is invested and you, you know, this is what you do and it's going to be a part of you. I accept that as part of how you look at it, but I also think that it's, there are many versions of wands and many reasons you have them, and I'm kind of like, oh, I like this one and I like that one, and yeah, I have one that is actually my really go-to one, which is actually on in that picture.
Yes.
So,
which
but,
is not posted yet. It will be posted soon. Again, Mercury retrograde. My computer is, I don't want to hurt its feelings because I don't want it to stop working. But we were having some challenges before the show, and the picture wouldn't upload, so I'll upload it later, and you'll be able to see all Elvira's amazing wands.
Yes, and it's funny because we will be talking as well about staff, and I have one, and it was a story we may or may not tell in this particular show, but how it wound up becoming mine and what the reason was and all the rest of it. But it really fascinates me to see the various styles, and, you know, now it's just, you know, let's get to the next step of discussing it and kind of go into maybe a little of the history so people understand that this is something that has been really very, very old and very primitive along with the development that it has gotten into intricacy.
Yeah. This is really, you know, Harry Potter has brought this mainstream again. And as I was saying to Elvira, and I think I even said this, I might have even said this on every show up to this point, but as far as I'm concerned, whatever it is that brings people to the craft, whatever it is that brings people into practicing or being curious about witchcraft, I think is a good thing. And time will weed out the people for who this is a novelty, you know, and that's fine. That's great. That's wonderful. But anyone who gets drawn into this type of magic for whatever reason is excellent. But wands are much more ancient than J.K. Rowling.
Definitely. Much.
Much. And you see writings and evidence of the wand being used in cultures all over the world. And one of the most written about is in Greece,
mm-hmm.
which is true, really. I mean, we can take a lot from modern paganism and myth from the Greeks, because they did keep such wonderful records, and we have so much that's been saved.
Right.
But there are many different deities that used wands.
One of which is Circe. She's not even a deity, but she is someone who in the Odyssey was one that made it, I guess if you want to call it, popular. She basically turned Odysseus's men into pigs. So,
The first feminist.
Yes, there you go. I mean, don't mess with this lady.
I love Circe. I love Circe. She's one of my favorite goddesses.
Yes.
And also Hermes, the god of communication, he who can, also known as Mercury. I am giving a plug to the god Mercury right now. We could use some of your blessings, oh great one. But he carries a rod, which is a type of wand, and that's now known as the caduceus, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's a wand. It's a magical tool
mm-hmm.
that symbolizes the shifting of energy from one place to another, being
mm-hmm.
able to direct that energy. And that symbol still holds power because it's used as a symbol for the medical profession.
Of course. And we definitely can say that the actual wand in varying forms has been physically used throughout history. I mean, we definitely can go to the fairy tales. We have the wand of the fairy godmother with the little star, little bright light at the end.
Right, which Elvira and I both read a book in this last week called The Witch's Wand. And the author of this book, whose name I cannot remember, but I believe a link will go up in the chat on how to look up that book. But he talks about the fairy godmother and her wand and the star on top of it, and that was the first time that was ever, a wand was ever drawn with a star on top.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that
yeah, funny? That is neat. That is neat. And I know that, again, you know, we go to ballads that have been the Italians and the ballads in the Middle Ages, and you've got different things about wands that are able to change or make happen things.
Right.
So.
Right, and even back to Greece for a second,
mm-hmm.
is one of the
gods who is connected to a wand is Dionysus, who is one of my very dear beloveds, and it's the Thyrsus, right? You pronounced it differently. How did you pronounce it?
Oh, that's Thyrsus?
Thyrsus, Thyrsus.
Thyrsus.
Something like that. But it's a wand with an acorn at the top of it, and this is one of the symbols of the god Dionysus. I had to give him a plug.
Yes. And they also, there's another version with a pine cone on top.
Right.
You know, with little ribbons and everything. And that I think they use also in the British Isles and the different aspects of dancing
right.
with the wand.
Right. It's a symbol of fertility.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, it obviously at that point definitely looks like one.
Right. And that's something Elvira and I were talking about before the show is, you know, the athame and the wand, there's a lot of crossover in their correspondences, and we'll talk about that more later. But there's also a lot of crossover in their uses, and they're both considered masculine tools. If you're going to follow that sort of duality, binary of masculine and feminine, both the athame and the wand are masculine energies. And the wand is very phallic, very phallic.
And as we were pointing out, no pun intended, that the particular aspect of wand is it would be a gentler version, which we will say is how it is looked magically, than, say, the athame in terms of the masculine energy and its portrayal of, you know, the energy shooting forth.
Right.
So we need to consider that. And, of course, things that have come farther forward is, the wand has made its appearance again in many ways. The Chronicles of Narnia.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, obviously, we talked about Harry Potter and the more modern versions of what it is in gaming and things like that.
Right.
So it has never really been very far away from its original roots.
No. And even in the stories of Moses, the wand is brought up in many different places, actually. You know, he uses his staff as a magical tool to part the seas and to do other types of acts of magic.
Right.
And the staff is another form of a wand. And there's all of this writings, especially around Moses' stories, of snakes turning into wands and wands turning into snakes. And so there's also something very interesting there about power, transformation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the snake is a symbol of transformation. It's also, snakes are often connected to healing. And so we have this interesting cycle of the wand and healing and transformation. So there's something very interesting there that we can still use in our modern workings around wands.
So true. And obviously we come to what does the wand actually mean in terms of how is this energy, how is it used in magical principle, not necessarily to destroy, but how is it used?
Right. So the way I think about it is we all came equipped onto this planet with a wand, and it's our finger, right? The first wand, we all have one. It's, you know, right at the end of my arm there. And that's the first one. That can send, why is it root to point? Because you're sending that energy. You're directing energy at someone, right? That's why that's rude. So that your wand that is attached to your person is a way of directing energy and sending energy. And let's be real, that's all you need. You don't have to go out and get some fancy wand or, you know, take 2 weeks to carve the perfect symbols into this beautiful piece of mahogany, or, you know, you can, absolutely. And there's something about the beauty of creating something that is wonderful, but you have a wand, you came equipped.
That's true. And if you remember when, as infants, and we, those of us who have had children or are around children, or you know, they point.
Yes.
They point. It becomes a way of getting attention.
Right.
And so it's actually done to be more gentle in commanding the energy rather than forceful as an athame would be.
Right. Plus the athame cuts through, right? It can be used as a tool of creating sacred space, but you're cutting away the other world and cutting in the sacred space
where a wand is more directing the energy and building almost like a force field or a barrier when you're creating sacred space.
Exactly.
So they both work, but they're just a slightly different energetic.
Which is why I think that it is, in its own right, air or fire.
Right.
It's the difference of the energies that you choose to make that as your representation. I think that's why, for me, it's more personal. I've been reading now and obviously coming to grips with my training as it was a fire tool.
The wand.
The wand.
Yeah.
And because of that, the athame was air.
Right.
And now I'm beginning to really look at a little bit more of what that may mean. Again, we're talking about air, fire, masculine, but it's a different way to deal with it. And I guess I, even though I tend to sometimes be a little bit more fiery, the fire actually seems gentler for what I want to do when I use it.
It's funny because when I first was learning about witchcraft, I learned that the wand was an element of air and the athame was an element of fire. And that made sense to me. You know, like we talked about on the athame show, that the athame is forged, it's made in fire. And now, especially now that I've gotten so much deeper into the tarot, now it makes more sense to me that the athame is air, and I've completely changed the way I hold it and feel about it. So, you know, it's funny, and I say when I teach workshops, I say this phrase a lot, your mileage may vary.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to trust how it feels to you, how you connect to that magical tool. Are you directing fire or are you directing air? You know, how is it working on with your energy? That's
right.
Way more important than what me or Elvira think or any book or any other practice. It's how does it work for you?
Right, because throughout all the different teachings, whether it's Hermetic Golden Dawn or it's Buckland or it's Gardner or any of the ones, it's always about what you are best feeling in terms of how it goes with you. And I think that's part of learning to be responsible for magic.
Right, absolutely. And so, the wand, more than the athame, the wand is about your will.
True.
Right? So, you know, the will, which in some traditions, your willpower sits in your solar plexus, right? That the chakra there is connected to willpower. And being able to direct that energy through your body and, you know, imagining your finger being that wand that you inherited at birth, directing that willpower through your finger, that's pretty powerful. And for me, it doesn't take much. Like, you can't see me, but I'm
stretching her arm
outwards and just feeling the extension of my will. It's pretty, doesn't take a lot. And I'm not super woo. I don't always feel things or have dramatic experiences, but I feel it when I extend my hand and focus on extending my will.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think of, you know, the movie Practical Magic.
Yes.
When the little girls are at the shop and the little bratty kids are outside chanting mean things to them, and the little girl comes outside and she says, "I hope you get chicken pox," and she points at the kid with her finger.
Yeah.
She was sending that spell.
Which
that
worked,
kid.
Actually.
He got chicken pox.
He did get chicken pox.
He deserved it.
Truly, truly. See, there we are, speaking our instrument. But, you know, it is interesting because, again, instruments.
Yeah.
Drummers, you know, the drum mallet is considered a wand when you're doing the shaman work and drumming.
Right.
You can think of, in modern day, the gavel of a judge.
That's interesting.
Yes.
I like that idea.
Yes. And, again, the more, how do I want to put this, the more exciting ways of seeing scepters and things as representations of will.
Right.
Those are the different versions.
Right, absolutely. Scepters of royalty, right? They the seat of power, the king, the queen, the ruling class, they hold the scepter. And now it's become a symbol of wealth. But originally that was a symbol of power, of being able to direct power.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know that for many of us, that's what the wand becomes, is it's an extension. So as much as we go out and find something that's pretty, or we go out and we make it, or we go out and, you know, do different things to acquire or have, as we would say, them come to us, unquote, that it is just that. It's a representation of us at that moment.
Right.
And our energies grow and change. And I think for me, that's why I have so many.
Yeah. Well, and that's something, you know, I don't use my wand all that much, really, which is why I only have the two. Like, I have my very first, and I have the one that I got at the Renaissance Fair several years ago, and that's it. Mm-hmm. I have those two. But what I've been, in doing some research on the history of wands for our show tonight, I've seen so many people writing and discussing and talking about having all of these wands for all of these different purposes. So there's a wand that they use only for the Samhain ritual, and there's a wand that they use for healing, and there's a wand that they use when they're working on growing things, and there's a wand that they use when they're doing a hand fasting ritual, whatever. They have all of these wands for all these different purposes, and there's something really fun about that. You know, you can find the right wood and decorate it and make it just for that one thing.
Right.
It seems pretty special, and I think I've, up until these last few weeks doing research, I've really sort of held the wand as like it's just this one tool and it does this one thing, and so my mind's been expanded just from researching.
I find that is true. In general, what we're doing on this show is we're not just explaining things that we have either just worked with over the years, but we are growing, and so our experience of talking about these things are making us open our minds even more and grow and learn and examine things in a different way.
Right. So that's what it's all about. I think more than anything, witchcraft, paganism, however you want to call it, you know, depending what hat I'm wearing today.
Right.
But it is about continuing the spiritual process, continuing to learn, continuing to be open, and recognizing when we change. You know,
right.
It doesn't have to be stagnant.
Right. One of the things I did want to mention, and we discussed this also, is they talk about the use of the wand in the right hand.
Right.
And, you know, it's an extension by being on the right hand. It's acquired to the left side of the brain, which is the linear, logical, masculine side.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that to me is fine. I'm right-handed. But then I turned to Phoenix and I said, but what about being left-handed?
Right, which I am.
Which you are.
Right, right. So there are different schools of thought on this left-handed, right-handed thing, right? I mean, just logically, because I always like to go to the logic first, because I am a skeptic. I may have mentioned this before. But for hundreds of years, dozens of years, I don't know, you weren't allowed to be left-handed. If those people at school saw you trying to write with your left hand, or if your parents or whoever was teaching you, the pen was taken out of your hand and put into your right hand. Really, only in the last 40 or 50 years, have left-handed people just been allowed to naturally be left-handed. And that's not to say people didn't be left-handed anyway, or there wasn't a person here or there that got away with it, but it was considered a bad omen to be left-handed. And I think a lot of our practices of witchcraft and neo-modern paganism developed before it was really okay to be left-handed.
Exactly.
So it was a right-handed oriented practice. And so the right hand was what was used to send energy. It was your sending hand. And your left hand was your receiving hand. And this became a pretty standard ritual, magical concept. But I don't think it's valid anymore.
No, I don't. And it's interesting because thinking about that, I mean, we've talked about, you know, not necessarily on the show, but we've talked in our own places, you hold this in your left hand to draw energy in, and you send it out with your right hand. And I'm beginning to think that what's coming out is it doesn't matter, because you have the left-handed path, the right-handed path. Even in Kabbalah, it's, you know, like there's a certain sense of where you are, the tree of life and the pillars,
right,
and all, and then, you know, hoo-ha, and there you are with, you know, good or bad. That's, I think, what we're challenging now.
Yeah. And if I sit here and I hold my hands out, my left hand is my sending hand. That I can feel it. And my right hand is my receptive hand.
It feels natural that way. And I'll tell you what, I always blame it on being left-handed, but when people say left and right, I always think dominant, and so I often mistake left and right. I get confused because I feel like my dominant side in the world, it's the right, and so I think that my left is my right. I get confused all the time.
Right.
But it's definitely my sending. It's definitely my dominant. So when I teach workshops on magical practices and things like this, I always use dominant hand and receptive hand, you know, because it, even if you are, if your dominant hand is your right hand, that may not feel right magically. Like when I was learning to shoot a bow, I had to learn what my dominant eye was. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Oh, my God, I didn't either.
Right? So you learn to, which eye is your more dominant eye, and it's not always your dominant hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from a magical perspective, we need to be open to what is my body telling me? What is my directing hand and what is my receiving hand?
Mm-hmm. I think that's very, very good to bring up because this was a situation born out of, obviously, her particular abilities and where her hands are in terms of what she has in terms of right, left, and mine, which is right, and, you know, that. So it was, again, a challenge to us
mm-hmm.
to not just take, and this, I think, goes back to the original show. It's a growing, living process.
Yes.
And magic and the use of it and the placement of it and the belief of it, it's growing. It's if we stayed stationary in one area, we are rigid and we will die. We will mm-hmm. fall over in the wind. We will not bend with the wind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I, again, on my banner of change and growth.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
So obviously, looking at our myriad of notes, which we both come with, you know, who knows how often, I would like to think that we could maybe discuss some of the different things that we like to use the wand for.
Mm, sure.
You know.
Yeah.
I know we talked about drawing a circle.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of that, I've always wanted to be able to shoot fire out of my wand. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way.
Maybe not literal fire, but perhaps magical fire.
True, true. And that may be, again, it's nice to see the visual
yeah.
in graphics, but it is true. I mean, you can feel it. And if you've ever walked into somebody's situation and you felt a push of energy,
mm-hmm.
that's their energy going out from their will, whether they point their finger or they just push it out.
Right.
And the wand is just more of an extension of it.
Yeah.
More visual, physical, tactile extension.
Right. I think I use my wand most often to create sacred space. I don't use it for much more than that right now. Mm-hmm. Now I have a staff that I use as like a boundary post.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it separates this from that, and I feel it's a little bit more of a security system in a weird way.
Okay.
You know, my staff delineates the boundary, and I feel pretty secure that nothing will cross that boundary.
Right.
You know, and then there's the stang, right, the staff that has almost like two horns. It's a staff, and then it has a V at the top,
mm-hmm.
which are really rare. Have you ever seen one?
No, I have never, not except in drawings.
My we have a studio audience here today. My ex-husband had a stang made from manzanita.
Oh.
And it was really cool. You know, it's this he's a tall dude, and it was about, you know, five feet tall, and then it split into a V, you know. It's a beautiful piece, and it directs energy in a very different way than a regular staff or a wand does.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah. Well, I know that if you put antlers on top,
mm-hmm.
you know, again, what you put on one end or the other
yeah.
is how that pulls energy in or sends it out.
Right.
So maybe talking a few minutes about decorating a wand with stones and different things that you want to add stuff to
right.
changes the way the wand is going to work.
Yeah, and I think we'll dig into that in a little more detail after the break.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
There's so much cool stuff that you can do to shift and shape the energy of the wand.
Mm-hmm.
It can be something very simple and very plain, or it can be something super dramatic and shiny and covered in bling, and it's going to shift the energy of what that object does for you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many possibilities. And I think so much more than the athame, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think the wand gives you way more opportunity for fine-tuning than an athame does.
Ah, now there we go. Tuning fork.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but... anyhow, so that, I guess, is how we're going to see our next part of our show after the break will be with regards to the actual size making put together and go from there.
Yeah, all the fun stuff.
All the fun stuff.
Getting your hands in it.
Yeah. So, but I think...
we'll be back after
we'll be back.
Break.
You're listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30; Candela's Corner, starring Candela Cambisa and Michael Correll, Mondays 5 to 7; The Crystal Silence League Hour, hosted by John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6; In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7; The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30; The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, starring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 6 to 7; and Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7, all time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
And we're back.
We are back.
One of the things we need to say right off the bat is about the Mystic Fair, October 15th and 16th, here in Santa Rosa at the Santa Rosa Veterans Center from 10 to 5, both days, free admission, free parking. So we really want everybody to kind of, if they're around, to come out, see us there, see a bunch of different wonderful things that will be there. They're going to have a 360-degree booth, a video booth that you can go in and experience a really neat thing that you can just, like, see something that they've set up and filmed. So it's going to be fun. Yeah. So just so you guys know, that's one of the things that we're all looking forward to in less than a 2-month period. It's scary, yeah. Okay, so.
All right. Wands.
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 Wands, wands. Okay, it's up to you, girl. You've got an idea on how you want to go for here. I'm going to let you kind of flow with it for a minute.
All right. So as we talked about earlier, I think we've been sort of making the assumption that everyone knows the wand is often wood, right? So let's continue with that. The wand is traditionally made of wood. Let's just say that out loud. I think we've just been kind of assuming up to this point. But it doesn't have to be made of wood. It could be made of clay. It could be made of solid stone. It could be made of virtually anything your imagination could come up with. It could be made of metal or crystals or what have you. But traditionally, it is made of wood. And the, again, traditional length is from the tip of your middle finger to the crook of your elbow. And that's actually quite long. If you look right now, look at your hand and your arm and your middle finger all the way down to the crook of your elbow. That's quite long.
Yeah.
And the wand is an extension of your will. So you can, you know, use your finger as a wand, as we were talking about, and then imagine, or if you have your wand handy, literally, pick up that wand and see that adding that extension, that length to your reach, and how that directs your will and it directs your power, and how much, you know, the point of the wand is to focus and direct that energy through it. And you're adding quite a grip, quite a bit to your length when you use a wand that's the traditional length.
Right.
And I don't
one of my wands is a traditional length and one of them is not. And it is very interesting to hold a wand that long. It almost feels, for at least for me, at first I thought, this is comically long. It's too long.
Right.
You know? But it is very powerful to have it be the traditional length. There's mm-hmm. something about having it be the same length as your as a body part. There's
right.
something.
Something very intense.
Yeah.
Intense.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you are feeling the call to have a wand or to make your own wand, ideally you're going to start with the wood. And there are as many options in wood as there are in plants and trees.
Very profound statement, yes.
I mean, literally. So it's worth looking into different types of woods and researching their magical correspondences. And, you know, I have a list of them here, but, you know, we'll name a few. For example, apple is connected to music and song and healing. You know, apple is the sacred wood of Avalon.
Mm, yes.
This realm of priestesses, and it's very Celtic in that way. And birch is the tree of beginnings, of newness, of the fresh start. The cherry tree is connected to desire and love. Hazel is a tree of understanding, of wisdom, of knowledge. The maple is a tree of shifting and changing, of transformation. Oak is a tree of opening, and again, it's a tree of wisdom, but it's different than the understanding of hazel. It's an opening to wisdom rather than a knowledge. So all of these trees, all of these plants, and it doesn't have to be a tree. You'll see in the picture we're going to post in a little while, one of the wands on the table today is a piece of rose bush. So that you can really use anything to be your wand. You just want to make sure you understand the energetic of that plant, or you have a relationship with that plant, which is a whole other thing. If there's a tree in your backyard and you have a relationship with this tree and you love it and you talk to it and you communicate with it and you have no idea what kind of tree it is, that's okay. Because you're developing a relationship with that specific entity. All trees and plants have a spirit. So instead of having the grand spirit of oak, maybe you have the spirit of the oak in your backyard.
Right.
Which is still very profound and beautiful.
Right. And I know that in more traditional ways, the spirit of trees are dyads.
Right.
So
right.
We all have feelings about our trees and our plants, and that's one of the reasons why, as we get on to later during this time frame, we'll talk about how to actually get a piece and do the process. But one of the things I did want to say is there were traditional things. Again,
yeah.
Traditional versus what you feel.
Yes. Yes.
Is a back to the same process we keep showing you is, yes, there's tradition, fruit-bearing trees.
Right.
Because of the way the energy blossoms and puts out forth that dynamic is what was part of more traditional ways of trees and woods that you would use.
Right. Right. And there are, again, all of these woods and plants, they have a spirit and an energy. And so doing your due diligence, doing your research, looking into these different plants and the spiritual correspondences will really help you. If you are looking for making a wand of healing, then you want to find a wood that's connected to healing. That's going to help you direct healing energy more succinctly, right, more powerfully, because you're using this idea of correspondences. The more things you can have in alignment with your goal, the easier it is to achieve your goal.
Exactly, and it's easier to draw that energy to you and to channel it forward,
mm-hmm.
which, again, is what this is about. It's pushing energy forward, channeling it forward.
Right, right. And so you start with the wood, and then you get to do fun things to the wood. Maybe you add some metals. And again, each metal has a specific type of correspondence. Copper is really good as a transmitter. It's really good at conductivity. Silver is good for intuition and feminine energy and the magic of the moon. So you start with this base of wood, and then you can add some metal, perhaps, and shift and change and use your artistic creativity to swirl it or make patterns or draw symbols with you know, if you use copper wiring, you could shape them into different runes or symbols or what have you to help direct the energy and add more correspondences to it. And that's also true with adding stones or bones or pieces of antler. Each stone, we could do a whole show on stones.
Maybe we will try to do that on the road.
Yeah.
How to deal with the other parts of magic.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you're using a, if you have a stone or a wand, you're making a wand and you want to connect it to feminine energy, perhaps you start with a piece of willow and then you add some silver spirals to it and then you add pieces of moonstone to it. And now you have this amazing, powerful tool connected to the divine feminine. And then if you want to use that wand for your own divine feminine power, perhaps you charge it with your menstrual blood or your saliva or a piece of your own, your bodily fluids.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this amazingly powerful tool. So you can see how all these correspondences add up and multiply each other and make your tool much more powerful.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And again, everything that you do comes through you, from you, and part of you.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they do talk about in some of the blessings of your magical tool, especially the wand, is to put a little bit of your blood into the actual item.
Right.
Because that is your life energy.
Right. Right. And like we discussed with Athame, is once you add that life force of yours, once you make this tool an extension of yourself, then it's really a good idea to keep it to yourself. Don't let other people handle your magical object. Don't leave it out so that the babysitter comes and starts waving it around and pretending to be Hermione Granger. You know, keep these things wrapped up and secure and hidden because they are pieces of you, and you don't just want anyone handling pieces of you.
Bingo, that's it. And that's part of what, when we talk about tools, specifically for magical purposes, there are some that are used in group rituals, coven rituals, the fact that they can be touched and utilized within that. But your personal items, it's the same as your personal underwear.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, well, I'm not sure I just want anyone wearing my underwear.
Right. Right. Oh. The wand to underwear ratio.
There we are. Get a little bit more down to earth.
I do want to talk about, briefly, this idea of the core of a wand.
Yes.
Because this is definitely something that Harry Potter, to go back to that, has made into this very interesting trend.
Mm-hmm.
Most wands, especially if you make them yourself, won't have a core because you're going out and finding a branch or a piece of wood or what have you. And that's it. There's no dragon heart string or phoenix feather inside of that piece of wood,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to say. You know, it is what it is. So there really isn't, there is, you can put a magical core in your wand.
Mm.
You can create an energetic that's specifically related to something that is internalized in that wand, but you're not going to hollow that piece of wood out and stick a peacock feather in it. You know, it's just, it's unlikely.
It's
not saying no one's doing it,
right?
But it's unlikely.
And it might be when it comes to using metals, because I know that
mm-hmm.
some of the wands back when I had my store that people were bringing to me to sell as, you know, lines, had a tube and you could put other crystals in it or stuff that you wanted in it to do that. So there is a difference between using wood in a core hollowed out area, because that then tends to weaken its integrity, its physical integrity.
Right.
But something that is hard like metal,
mm-hmm.
you can use it that way.
Right.
So, again, what you choose it for, what you want, it doesn't have to be a huge lead pipe. It's not a good idea.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what lead is all about, but, it, you know, ba-boom.
It's
no,
not
but,
good for us. I know that.
No, there you go. So I would look at it as the different intents, but I think you're getting to the fact that you can do it on a non-physical level.
Yes. Yeah.
and do it from the astral plane or the spirit plane,
right.
to infuse that energy.
Right, which is something that you should be using your wand for anyway. You know, once you have that wand and you do a ritual to dedicate it or to cleanse and consecrate it or what have you, you can do astral journeys with your wand. You can go into the other realms with your wand, and your wand may actually reveal more about itself in another realm than it can in this realm. You might see it take the shape of an animal or another type of spirit and be able to communicate with this magical object that you've created. So it is a good idea, once you go through the process of creating this magical object, to go into the astral and have a conversation and go on an adventure together and do some magic.
Right. And I think for us, it's opening ourselves to both look at the real world and what can be accomplished, but we always are working with spirit and we are always working with the non-physical realm. It's a bridge. It's a bridge between the two.
Right.
And it's interesting that even going back to some of the myths that we wound up looking at the beginning, to understand that as the wand is a bridge,
yes,
so too was the actual experiences that people have done,
yes,
to get that bridge,
right,
in different forms or myths, as we want to go with.
Right. So let's say you want to make a wand.
Okay.
Right? So we're going to go with wood for simplicity's sake tonight. So pick your tree. Whether you research the magical correspondences of the tree or you go to the tree in the backyard, but you find the tree, the plant that you want to make your wand out of. And there are some superstitions about the virgin wood. I'm saying this with air quotes. Some folks believe you should never pick up a stick that's fallen on the ground and use that as your wand. I think that's a bunch of malarkey. If you find a piece of wood on the ground that you just love and adore, use it. But some folks believe you have to actually cut the living branch as your wand. And in order to do that, you have to have a conversation with the tree. And again, as the skeptic I am, I get that that sounds a little nutty. But trees have spirits. They have energy. They breathe. They communicate with each other. And so you just take a minute. Open up to the spirit of that tree. Ask if it will allow you to cut a piece of it. You'll get a feeling. You'll get something. A breeze will blow by, or you'll get a clear feeling, no, this doesn't feel okay. And so you wait, or you find another tree. But when you get a yes, then you can cut that piece, and then you leave an offering. And what I was taught is you always can take some hair and give that to the tree.
Yes, and I know that a lot I've done that. You know, I'll go and do anything that I pick up, you know, think, thank goodness I've got a lot of hair, and it does tend to be that. Or you can give it the saliva, you can give it, you know, a breath. I sometimes, when I pick my gardenias, I will kiss the plant.
That's sweet.
Yes, well, I love gardenias, so obviously she and I are really close.
Sweet. Yeah.
But.
So you are taking something from that plant, so you give something back in gratitude,
mm-hmm,
right? And depending on the type of wood, before you start adorning it and making it beautiful and connecting to it, you may have to do some mundane things like season it. It may have to sit out and dry. It may have to go through a process of seasoning before you can start decorating it and making it intimately yours. You know, so you're going to have to do a little study and research and figure out if that's required. And then more mundane things, but you can make them magical. You want to perhaps pull the bark off. Perhaps you want to sand it. Perhaps you need to take some time and do a little bit of whittling on it or shape it into it or clear off the knobs, whatever. Make that a magical process. Sit with it, listen to it, let it speak to you, and hear, I need to shave a little bit off of here. Oh, I need to sand a little bit more here. Listen to it. This is an extension of you. You want to start communicating with it. And you may want to add a polish or a finish or a stain, but understand how that may also shift or change the energy of that wood. You may want to then attach some crystals or stones, and you can do this by wrapping them or using adhesives. But you need to know what adhesives will work with the wood and what adhesives don't. These are mundane things, but they affect your magical practice. And then you may want to anoint it with oils. Is this a wand for healing? Use some healing oil from Lucky Mojo. It's really good stuff. You can add that on to your wand, and that will infuse and add healing energy into that wand. And then you're going to want to wake it up. Those are my words, wake it up. And that's, you add the breath of life to it. You breathe into that wand, and then you take it into sacred space and introduce it. You introduce it to the elements. You introduce it to your gods. You introduce it to your ancestors, whoever it is that you work with. And then you now have this new magical buddy.
Yes. And believe me, all of us have done one or the other of these things, or all of them. I know that I am really one to like to get into some of the more craft stuff. So this has always been more than just, I'm going to do this. It's fun.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other part of it, is it's fun. It's not so serious.
Right.
I know that in reading our books and in, you know, learning our information that we have over the years, it's been about being, you know, sacred and serious and all of that. But it's all about, this is you. If you're going to be, if this is who you are and you're serious, go for it.
Yeah.
But if you like to have some fun and it's part of who you are, that's part of it. When I learned how to call directions, part of what I learned was, yes, you're reverent, but in a somewhat irreverent way. The same thing is about how to make these tools, and specifically what we're talking about here is the wand.
Right. Well, the charge of the goddess says mirth and reverence, you know, so having a good time and being playful and letting it be joyful. That's part of the reason we're witches and pagans. It's joyful. It's a fun experience, and this can be a fun experience.
And
making your magical tools is fun.
It is fun.
Yeah.
And that's part of our life, is to have fun, to revel in that, and to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I think that for me and you, we've enjoyed doing this show. It's reveling in learning and expressing these informations to others and to ourselves.
Right. Yeah, remembering.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that, I think, is for me and you and all the people that are listening, have fun.
Yeah.
This is about having fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So is there anything you want to kind of, I guess we're kind of winding down now.
Yeah, we're pretty close to our time. That flew by.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, love wands.
I think just next week, you know, well, I'd say if you can tune in live on Blog Talk Radio, and there's a chat, so feel free to join us in chat every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And next week we'll be back on Friday. We're going to talk about rituals, which is an endlessly fascinating topic. There's so much. Rituals could be like a three-parter.
Yeah, I know. I was looking at our list, and I looked at that, and I'm going, A, B, and C, maybe
D. Yeah.
But, you know, we will definitely have one there.
So we'll tune in next week. We'll talk about rituals and give you some examples of things that you can do in your own practice or as a solitary or with a coven. And we're going to have fun.
Fun.
It'll be.
Sounds like we should have the Beach Boys. Fun. Not that kind of thing. I don't know. Somebody was, one of my friends was doing a Beach Boy thing, and so I guess I've got that stuck in my head.
Right.
So, but you get, this is part of what we do on Fridays, is come together and giggle and talk about things before we get started and share and say, oh, did you know this? And I think that's how we explain it to you all out there, is how fun it is.
Yeah.
And some of it is serious, and we need to be, you know, present with what we're doing.
Right.
But,
Well, thank you all for listening, and thank you, Elvira and Alan, and we'll see you next week.
We will see. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.